Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The Israeli military said on Friday that one of the bodies released by Hamas did not belong to any of the hostages held in Gaza, accusing Hamas of violating an already shaky ceasefire. The military said two of the bodies were identified as infant Kafir Bibis and his four-year-old brother Ariel, while a third body that was supposed to be their mother Sherry was found not to match with any hostage and remain unidentified. The military said in a statement, "This is a violation of utmost severity by the Hamas terrorist organization, which is obliged under the agreement to return four deceased hostages." The family of hostage Oded Lifshitz said in a statement that his body had been formally identified. Palestinian militants handed over four black coffins in a carefully orchestrated public display as a crowd of Palestinians and dozens of armed Hamas militants watched. The purported remains of the boys, their mother, and Lifshitz were handed over under the Gaza ceasefire agreement reached last month with the backing of the U.S. and the mediation of Qatar and Egypt. A series of explosions Thursday on three parked buses has rattled central Israel in what authorities suspected was a militant attack. No injuries were reported. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
Police rushed forces to the scene in Bat Yam, a Tel Aviv suburb, as they searched for suspects. Bomb disposal searched buses and trains nationwide for additional bombs. A police spokesperson told local TV that explosives were found on two other buses. The mayor of Bat Yam says it's a miracle no one was hurt. He says the buses had finished their routes and were in a parking lot. I'm Haya Panjwani.
This is VOA News. A top White House official said Thursday that U.S. President Donald Trump's increasingly tough criticism of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reflects the administration's growing frustration with what they see as Zelensky creating roadblocks to finding an endgame to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
His frustration with President Zelensky is that you've heard is multifold.
For starters,
there needs to be a deep appreciation for what the American people, what the American taxpayer, what President Trump did in his first term.
And White House National Security Advisor Mike Waltz says Zelensky has not shown that. Instead,
some of the rhetoric coming out of Kyiv, frankly, and insults to President Trump were unacceptable.
It comes a day after Zelensky said the president's living in a Russian disinformation space, and the president called Zelensky a dictator. Asked if the president also sees Russia's Vladimir Putin the same way, Waltz did not respond, and also did not directly respond when asked which leader the president thinks is more responsible for the war. The rhetoric comes as Zelensky met with Trump Ukraine envoy Keith Kellogg. The news conference that was supposed to follow their talks was canceled, and Zelensky's spokesman says that was by U.S. request. Sagar Magani, Washington.
With European leaders scrambling to bolster their militaries amid doubts about the U.S. commitment to Europe's defense, Turkey, which boasts NATO's second largest army, could be a key part of Europe's plans, especially in any peacekeeping operation in Ukraine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky used a visit to Turkey on Tuesday to emphasize the importance of Ukraine's allies deploying soldiers to guarantee any peace agreement reached with Russia. Zelensky said he had discussed the issue with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, but that it was too early to reveal the outcome of the talks. While Erdogan has close ties with Zelensky, the Turkish leader has also maintained good relations with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The importance of the Turkish army to European security could be on the rise, with the United States demanding that Europe take more responsibility for its own defense. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
tensions high between Ukraine and the U.S., what are the prospects for a peace deal with Russia?
Putin does not want to establish a durable peace. He wants to take effective political control of Ukraine.
The latest from the Middle East.
In Tel Aviv, people mourned at what is known as Hostages Square outside Israel's defense headquarters.
And Germany prepares for an election.
Ich empfinde es als absolut besorgniserregend.
I find it absolutely worrying that racism and right-wing communication are becoming the norm.
Today is Friday, February 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope. It's been quite a week in the world of international diplomacy.
The fallout from U.S. President Donald Trump's comments criticizing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky continued on Thursday as Trump doubled down on his claim that Zelensky's a dictator because he has not held elections during the war with Russia. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has reaction.
New Russian attacks on the Ukrainian cities of Odessa and Kyiv Thursday, as Europe reacted to U.S. President Donald Trump's claims that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has not sought an end to the war and is a dictator for not holding elections. John Healey is the defense secretary for the United Kingdom.
3 years ago, one country illegally invaded another, and since then, the Ukrainians have been fighting for their freedom.
Some longtime allies noting a change in the U.S. security partnership. Sophie Primas is a spokesperson for the French government.
En quelque sorte, l'Europe.
Europe is realizing that it cannot delegate its security to other powers. The French government stands by Ukraine as it fights for its freedom, but also for our European security.
On Capitol Hill, Trump's claims about Ukraine have drawn strong criticism from congressional Democrats. Democratic Senator Chris Coons is a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
For President Trump to demand an election before achieving some sort of ceasefire or a just and lasting peace misunderstands or misrepresents who's the aggressor and who's the victim. President Putin of Russia has never been elected in a free and fair election.
Some Republican lawmakers also pushed back on claims that Ukraine started the war with Russia, but others have joined President Trump in calling for an election in Ukraine. Republican Senator Josh Hawley.
Our president is right that they haven't had elections in a long time, and they are basically under martial law. That's not good. When you claim to be defending democracy, they need to practice it.
And former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, current deputy chair of Russia's Security Council, wrote on X, "If you told me just 3 months ago that these were the words of the U.S. president, I would have laughed out loud." But one analyst told VOA Trump's criticism of Zelensky clearly repeats Russia's false claims about Ukraine. Liana Fix is Europe Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We have to see this as a move by Donald Trump to undermine the legitimacy of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and in the worst case, as Trump advocating for Russia's position.
Zelensky met with U.S. envoy to Ukraine Keith Kellogg on Thursday in Kyiv, but a planned press conference was canceled at the request of the U.S. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
For some context and analysis on what's going on from someone who's been there before, Steve spoke with Washington's former ambassador to Kyiv, John Herbst.
What was your reaction when you heard Donald Trump call Volodymyr Zelensky a dictator?
Oy gevolt. Look, I think what's happened is that the serious purpose of achieving a durable peace deal has become diverted into a personal exchange of caustic comments between Trump and Zelensky. I think this reflects sort of the idiosyncratic style of President Trump and is not necessarily a good indicator of where this process is going.
Well, from the outside, it certainly looks like the process is kind of a mess.
I think you could legitimately call it a mess. But I don't believe, well, let's put it this way. I know for certain that Zelensky still is looking for a good relationship with Trump and the United States because he needs U.S. support to make sure Putin does not take control of the country of Ukraine. And I think here's where a lot of people would disagree. I think that Trump still has in mind to get a quick deal which establishes a durable peace between Ukraine and Russia. I believe that is still his intention.
It might still be his intention, but if you believe what a lot of analysts are saying is he's throwing Ukraine under the bus and giving Russia what they want.
No. Those two things are contradictory. And you're right that the majority of analysts believe that that's exactly what Trump is doing.
So what is he doing?
And what I'm saying to you is I believe the weight of the evidence, not overwhelming weight of the evidence, suggests that Trump still wants to achieve quickly a peace deal that establishes a stable peace, not a peace deal that breaks down and leads to renewed war. I think that is still his objective. And I think that he has been diverted from this by some clever Russian diplomacy and then his own instincts when, not surprisingly, Zelensky expressed some concern about the latest turns in his Trump's approach to the whole issue.
Is a durable peace possible if the Ukrainians aren't at the negotiating table with the Russians and the U.S.?
Well, I don't think there's any reason to assume that they won't be.
They're not right now.
There's been one engagement. They have not been there. But that doesn't mean there aren't going to be future engagements. Obviously, there will be. And you've had statements by senior American officials, but I guess not president
normally
himself.
Of course, is this how it's supposed to be?
If I were in charge of our policy, I would have doubled down on Trump's very good start in the first 3 days of his second term. Putin does not want to establish a durable peace. He wants to take effective political control of Ukraine. So he'll say he's ready to negotiate, but he doesn't want to get any agreement because he wants his troops to continue marching into Ukraine. He wants to get back all, of course. And that's why he's trying to use this period to stretch out negotiations and also to weaken the Trump terms that he doesn't like. That's his game. Trump, I believe, wants to get a durable peace. But right now, Putin's having his way because Trump's devoting his energy and his fire at the Ukrainians, who basically want the same thing he wants. I say basically because they'd actually rather have a better peace deal. But I think they're willing to accept the Trump outline if it gets a durable peace.
How do you see the war coming to an end, or do you see the war coming to an end?
If the large majority of commentators are right that Trump is going to sell out Russia, sell out Ukraine, excuse me, it'll be much harder for Ukraine to defend itself, and it could wind up losing this war. And that would be an historical tragedy for Ukraine. But it will also be a major geopolitical defeat for the United States and the West. It will make Trump look like an extremely incompetent national security president, if, again, the critics are right. If I'm right, this week or so of pyrotechnic commentary will fade away, and Trump will get back to the task of intelligently, as opposed to not so intelligently, trying to get a deal done. And then he faces the problem of Putin, and either he lets Putin get away with it or he doesn't.
John Herbst is a former American ambassador to Ukraine. He's senior director of the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council. Mr. Ambassador, thanks for your analysis today. Thanks for your time on what I'm sure has been a very busy day.
All right, thank you.
We've heard from diplomats and pundits, politicians and professors about the growing rift between the U.S. and Ukraine. To find out what ordinary Ukrainian citizens are feeling, we called upon our Kyiv correspondent, Anna Chernikova. First, President Trump said that Zelensky started the war. Then he called him a dictator. Then Trump spoke with Putin without Zelensky. What are people in Kyiv saying about what's going on? Not the politicians, not the pundits, but the actual people.
The degree of the latest comments and texts and tweets from President Trump, of course, made many people worry that Ukraine could actually be left without one of the main allies, and that President Trump and new U.S. administration might actually turn towards Russia. And this is probably the biggest fear, and a lot of people also are saying that they believe that negotiations is a good idea, and that negotiations is actually a way to go toward the end of hostilities. But those negotiations should be on the Ukrainian terms, because Ukraine is a victim, and or at least consider Ukrainian points and Ukrainian opinion on that. So I should say that the main fear is that Ukraine could be left behind, and that Ukrainian opinion and Ukrainian position could be left behind, and that Ukraine could actually turn from victim to the aggressor. And this latest also comments made this, you know, feeling even more.
I just spoke to a former ambassador from the United States to Ukraine, and what he said was that what President Trump wants is a durable, lasting peace in Ukraine. And what Ukraine wants is a durable, lasting peace in Ukraine. Russia is the only party that doesn't want this. The problem is that President Trump is inexperienced at these kinds of negotiations and global diplomacy, and he's not handling it well.
There is belief here in Ukraine that President Trump was trying to kind of propose President Putin certain ceasefire, but again, we do not really see any desire from President Putin and from Russian official delegations that that is now involved into certain negotiations. Because after the phone call with President Putin, after the meeting with Russian delegation, hostilities didn't stop, not only in Kyiv, just across the country. And people in Ukraine expect this to continue, and expect that while this kind of negotiating process is establishing and in the beginning of its path, of its route, this would be the reality for Ukrainians. So this is basically, you know, how you can see that probably Russia is not really willing to go into any ceasefire at this point, at least.
Do you think the Ukrainian side would be willing, the Ukrainian people would be willing to accept a peace deal if it meant giving some territory to Russia in exchange for the durable, lasting peace and perhaps other troops in Ukraine to help enforce that peace?
You know, I've been talking to people, but also I've been talking to experts who actually conduct polls on that. And the latest polls demonstrate, and this is actually feeds to what people also told me on the streets, that people are getting more realistic about the possibilities of the peace deal, of possible peace deal, and about, you know, concessions that Ukraine will have to accept. So, you know, this is kind of a understanding of what this could mean for Ukraine and for the future.
And we'll have to leave it there for today. VOA's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks so much for your time, and stay safe.
Thank you, Steve.
And here are more stories we're following from around the world.
The Senate has narrowly voted to confirm President Trump's nominee, Kash Patel, as FBI director. The vote Thursday puts the Trump loyalist atop the nation's premier federal law enforcement agency, despite Democrats' doubts about his qualifications and concerns he'll go after the Republican president's adversaries.
Hong Kong's largest pro-democracy party took an initial step towards dissolving itself on Thursday. Hong Kong's Democratic Party's chairperson, Lo Khin-hai, said in a news conference that the party's central committee has decided to look into the procedures involved. Lo said the decision was made based on their understandings of the current political situation and social climate. It's the latest sign of the city's narrowing space for civil society groups after Beijing introduced a national security law to quell dissent.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he will request that the United Nations assume funding for the structural and logistical expenses of a multinational force in Haiti that is struggling to fight violent gangs. Guterres made the announcement late Wednesday in Barbados, where leaders of a 15-member Caribbean trade bloc gathered for a regional conference. The U.S. and other countries have warned that the mission lacks personnel and resources. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. In American politics today, the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, is underway in Maryland, just outside Washington.
The conference includes political heavyweights as well as young up-and-comers and serves as a glimpse into the mindset of the Republican Party. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell takes us there.
A warning for Europe, delivered by Vice President J.D. Vance.
Well, look, obviously, we're going to continue to have important alliances with Europe, but I really do think the strength of those alliances is going to depend on whether we take our societies in the right direction.
Vance spoke Thursday at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference. This year's gathering drew in right-leaning European leaders from Argentina, Britain, Poland, Hungary, and Italy. Analysts say they are watching the dissolution of one of the U.S.'s most important alliances play out in real time. Jim Kessler is Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way.
I think you'll have to take what's going on at CPAC very, very seriously. And, you know, what we're witnessing here is a separation of America from our traditional allies in Europe, from NATO. And this is an 80-year partnership that looks like it's fracturing right now. And so I think that that's a concern for Americans. It's really a concern for Europe.
Not all Europeans disagree with the Trump administration. Balázs Orbán is political director for Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán.
President Trump is right. As it was said by my prime minister, this war has to end because it brings us nowhere. It's crazy. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people are dying.
And Diana Jovanovici-Szaszka, a member of European Parliament who heads a far-right party in Romania, told VOA that the Trump administration invited her. This, she said, is her first CPAC. She spoke of the stances she shares with Trump, stances that, she says, led Romania's constitutional court to ban her from that nation's 2024 presidential race.
Because I have opinions against European Union, because I have opinions against NATO, with these actions of NATO to create a war and something like that. And because of my statements of liberty, and because I was against vaccination COVID, and because I was against mask, and I was the voice of Romania, as you are a voice of America, in pandemic, they told me you have unconstitutional opinions, so you cannot go to be elected.
The CPAC conference was instrumental in vaulting Trump to the top of conservative politics. He addressed the meeting during his first term. This year, he speaks on Saturday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
We turn our attention now to the Middle East, where the bodies of Israeli hostages were returned as Israelis lined the streets to mourn and pay their respects. Radio's correspondent Sean Hogan has the story.
Hamas handed over the bodies on Thursday of four Israeli hostages, including the two youngest captives taken by the militant group in their October 7 attack on Israel. Infant Fia Bibas and his four-year-old brother Ariel are among the most potent symbols of the trauma-inflicted day. The two boys, their mother Shiri Bibas, and a fourth hostage, Oded Lifshitz, were handed over under the Gaza ceasefire agreement reached last month. Armed Hamas militants surrounded the handover site as the four black caskets were placed into Red Cross vehicles. The Israeli military said the coffins were then scanned for explosives before being transported to Israel. Israelis lined the road in the rain near the Gaza border to pay their respects as the convoy drove by.
We stand here all together with a broken heart. The sky is also crying with us. And we pray to have to see better days.
In Tel Aviv, people mourned at what is known as Hostages Square outside Israel's defense headquarters.
Two little boys who were taken from their home by savages. And we couldn't bring them home alive. It's mind-boggling. I think it's beyond human comprehension. The sense of loss, the sense of rage, that permeates, I think, most of Israeli society.
Hamas said all four were killed in Israeli airstrikes, but their deaths were never confirmed by Israeli authorities. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the country was united in unbearable grief and vowed to eliminate Hamas. Fia Bibas was 9 months old when the Bibas family, including their father Yadin, who was returned in an exchange for prisoners this month, was abducted at kibbutz near Oz. Lifshitz was 83 when he was abducted from near Oz, the kibbutz he helped found. His wife, Yocheved, was seized with him and released 2 weeks later, along with another woman. Saturday, we'll see the return of 6 living hostages in exchange for hundreds more Palestinians, expected to be women and minors detained by Israeli forces in Gaza during the war. Thursday's handover marks the first return of dead bodies during the current first phase ceasefire agreement.
Sean Hogan of Reuters reporting for us.
This weekend, Germany is set to hold an election. It's been a bitter campaign with migration and the cost of living at the forefront, as Henry Ridgewell reports the lead candidate to be Germany's next chancellor has accused Washington of interfering in the election.
Hartmut Kurter grew up in the former East Germany, building a successful carpentry business after German reunification. For decades, he voted for the centre-right Christian Democrats. That changed in 2015, when then-Chancellor Angela Merkel allowed in over 1 million migrants. Kurter is now a member of the Anti-Immigration Alternative for Germany, or AfD, party.
It only seemed to be a matter of dark-skinned people who weren't nice, who weren't polite, who weren't the way I wanted them to be. You should show a little consideration, and they don't do that at all.
The Alternative for Germany party is capitalizing on voter frustration over migration, polling in second place ahead of Sunday's election at 21%. AfD leader Alice Weidel.
What I stand for is to stop this illegal migration.
Meanwhile, a recent spate of deadly terror attacks in Germany, the latest in Munich on Friday, has intensified the debate over migration. The AfD has won support from billionaire businessman Elon Musk, a prominent ally of US President Donald Trump. But the party's rhetoric repulses many Germans. The AfD is being monitored by domestic intelligence services as a suspected extremist organization. Protests against the far right have been held in Berlin and other cities. Antje Marta was among those protesting in the German capital.
I find it absolutely worrying that racism and right-wing communication are becoming the norm.
Immigration is dominating the election campaigns, says analyst Sarah Wagner.
This is the number one issue that people are really looking at and is going to influence their vote choice. The probably second most prominent issue is the economy and the state of the economy. People are in much more of a cost of living crisis than they were at the last election in 2021.
Economic pressures led to the collapse of the three-party coalition government in November. Incumbent Chancellor Olaf Scholz of the Social Democrats wants to increase borrowing to fill a budget shortfall and help fund military aid for Ukraine. Friedrich Merz, leader of the Christian Democrats, who are leading the polls at 29%, says the country shouldn't take on more debt.
The economy of the Federal Republic of Germany is now bringing up the rear in the European Union. We are in last place.
Merz will likely fall short of a majority, but has ruled out forming a coalition with the far-right AfD. That drew criticism from U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, who told delegates at the Munich Security Conference on Friday that, quote, the voice of the people matters. Merz accused Vance of interfering in the German election. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.